Dr. Jacqueline Carlson, Homestead Animal Health, is here for our education and, of course, our enlightenment when it comes to pets and how we take care of them. Always good to have you on the program. Good morning to you, Doctor.
Good morning, everyone. Glad to be here.
So give us, before we talk about today's festivities, let's give us a snapshot of what the last month's been like at Homestead Animal Health. We were kind of talking off the air a little bit, saying you were staying busy. That's always good to see.
Yes, it has been busy. So certainly with the, well, depending on really the minute when we're talking about, like, it was, Monday? Hot, cold, windy,
right.
Humid. But anyway, with the generally nicer weather, yes, everyone's dusting off their saddles and getting the horses out and in shape. And so been doing a lot of teeth and, you know, spring vaccines and things on horses, lameness exams. And then also, right, those darn little mosquitoes. And certainly we've talked about how the ticks have been, really just had a wonderful spring. They've been enjoying this weather immensely. And so lots of heartworm tick screen testing for the dogs and flea and tick prevention's going out the door. So that's good. The on the downside of things, been seeing some blocked kitties, cats that are unable to urinate.
Hmm.
And so that is a life-threatening situation and can be a challenging situation. So that's been kind of the downside, seen some hard cases. But in general, yeah, just like lots of good spring work and preventative care.
Topic today is geriatric pets, how to take care of them, and this is important. You know, it's the old adage, we wish our pets wouldn't get old, but it's just inevitable. Like all of us getting older. Yeah. It's like you're either getting older or you're in the ground. I mean, there's just one or the other, and unfortunately we all get older and our pets do too. Shame they have to get older, but they just do.
Yes. But right, like you said, it is better than the alternative.
Right.
At least, you know, being above ground is certainly good. But we want to make sure that we're managing their above ground days as best we can and that they are still having, you know, good quality of life. And so certainly there are some things just to kind of be aware of and, you know, maybe make note. And, of course, hindsight's always 20/20. And, you know, should a kind of a crisis event come up, you know, and then I have a discussion with the client and, oh, actually, you know what? Yeah, I have noticed this or that. So for our kitties, we'll start off with them. So at 8 years of age, kitties are then considered senior animals. And unfortunately, the vast majority of cats will at some point, you know, generally succumb or at least have to try to deal with some degree of kidney disease or kidney failure. And where that can become challenging is certainly that's where, you know, kind of regular lab work and preventative lab work, we can establish, okay, well, this is baseline. This is what is normal for your cat. So we can watch things kind of moving forward and looking for those trends. But otherwise, in general, our basic kidney enzymes, so to speak, our BUN and creatinine, they do not become elevated until 75% of the little filtration units, the little nephrons in those kidneys, are not functioning. And so when you're down to 25% kidney function, now we see lab work changes. Thankfully, there is some new testing available and some other things that we can check to get a more comprehensive picture. But the kidney is amazing. And like I say, we sometimes will not see changes in our lab work until we're quite far into the disease process. So what are some of the other symptoms that we maybe, you know, that I want you to watch for at home? So if your cat's always been, you know, a pretty good eater, and now suddenly kind of the classic story is they'll walk up to that food bowl and, you know, they'll meow and they'll be hungry and they'll ask for food. They'll walk up, they'll take a little sniff, and then they just kind of walk away without taking a bite. Or maybe you're cleaning the litter box. You needed to clean it more often because you're thinking, oh, goodness, there's just a lot more, you know, urine in here. It's a lot heavier. It's more wet. You know, there's larger clumps, things like that. So if the kidney's not functioning as well, it's not reabsorbing as much water, so they are peeing out more water. So therefore, like, so you can see changes in the litter box. But otherwise, it's a lot of times it's an appetite thing, and it's, you know, maybe they will only eat treats. They don't want to eat their cat food. Or you get, you know, you think, oh, they must be bored. I'll get a different cat food. And they eat that cat food great for a week or two. And then they stop eating that one. And so then you're, like, constantly changing, you know, your kibble and your between canned and dry and things just to keep them interested in food. That can be a sign that actually, like I say, we might have something actually going on. They're just sort of bored with their food, but that they just kind of, they get nauseous. And cats especially will develop something called food aversion, where they associate, oh, I ate this, and then I didn't feel good. Hmm. And really, it has nothing to do with the food. It's just that they have kidney disease, and there's just kind of this underlying nausea, and like say there's some uremia, so there's, when the kidneys aren't filtering, you know, toxins and things kind of build up more in the blood, and they just feel cruddy. And then they think, oh, nope, don't want to eat that. Oh, but this is new. Let me try this. And so, like I say, sometimes you can entice them for a couple weeks, but keeping them eating is really, that's the battle with kitties and kidney disease. Now, if, and you'll also notice weight loss as well, not just because they're not eating, but then their body starts breaking down their own muscle, and so they can really kind of get skinny. You know, you go to pet them, and you're like, oh, I can feel all your backbones, or, man, your hips are starting to protrude, that sort of thing. Now, certainly, a wet, you know, heavy litter box full of urine could also indicate diabetes. That is also a, you know, another differential that we worry about in our older kitties. Now, on the flip side, if you have a cat that is just ravenous and just has like an insatiable appetite and you can't ever seem to feed them enough, but they're not gaining weight and they might even be losing weight despite just eating all the time or at least always wanting to eat, then we want to worry about hyperthyroidism or an elevated thyroid level in our cats. And that, again, is something that also is rather common in our elderly kitties. And it's typically, you know, a benign sort of like tumor on their thyroid gland, but it kicks out a lot more thyroid hormone, and so their metabolism just gets ramped way up. And so, like I say, they always want to eat, but they don't gain weight. Sometimes they get almost like a voice change, and they might kind of yowl and wander around, and they just can become more talkative sometimes too, I'll see. So that's kind of, those are, I'd say, the big three for our senior kitties that I worry about.
You know, I'm not an expert. I leave that for you, who is an expert. But I do know, just from having pets, that when a pet doesn't have an appetite and doesn't want, and I can only speak for dogs because I've never had cats, but as far as dogs go, but that's a really bad sign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you look into the dictionary under red flags. There's a big giant red flag right there. That's a bad one.
Yes, absolutely. And I think with our canine patients or pets, you know, certainly then with our dogs, then maybe more of some of the behavioral things come into play. I mean, so right, like appetite, or, oh man, they don't want to play fetch. They always want to play fetch. You know, that's strange. So certainly in the dogs, there's kind of two main ones. One, it's kind of a failure of the body, and one is more of a failure of the mind, so to speak. So certainly arthritis in dogs. That's something that is quite ubiquitous in many of our canine pets, and whether that be maybe they've had some hip dysplasia they've been dealing with during their life, or they ruptured a cruciate, you know, sort of blew out their knee, that sort of thing, or just general wear and tear. But it's important to keep them moving and keep them active, because you don't use it, you lose it. And so it's one thing, you know, to have sort of arthritis and discomfort, but then they think, oh, I don't want to go for a walk anymore. I'm just going to lay here. Then they start to lose that muscle mass and strength and tone, and then we get weakness, and then we've really got some problems and, you know, some quality of life issues because there's, you know, I can help manage pain. There's lots of supplements. There's medications. There's injections. You know, there's a lot of things for, like I say, kind of the pain. But if we get to that weakness component, that's a tough place to be. So, like I say, keeping them active, maybe they can't do 1 mile anymore, but they can do, you know, around the block. Okay, well, great. That's still something. Or if they like to swim, that's a great low-impact exercise to still keep them moving. Or maybe even it's just, you know, depending on what's painful for them, maybe even it's just working on, like, sitting and standing or walking on and off the curb outside the house. So, like I say, it's not that they have to still run a marathon, but just keeping them active is important.
So as the pets get older, would you like to see them a little bit more often than when they were younger? Should we increase the frequency of checkups?
Yes. And that would be great. I love to see senior pets twice a year, just so that, again, we can watch, okay, well, what about weight? Are we, and, you know, and of course, especially dogs, they love to get lumps and bumps as they age. we want to keep tabs on those lumps and bumps. Is this something, you know, is it just a little benign fatty one or a cyst, or is this something that's more concerning? And we want to address things earlier because obviously, you know, as we're nearing the end of their lifespan, we have less time to work with, and certainly dealing with, you know, lumps and bumps when they're smaller and easier to remove means less time under sedation or anesthesia. And, you know, like I say, catching things earlier and being more proactive and preventative is great with our senior pets.
So you mentioned, you know, supplements, that sort of thing. When should you start giving them? And does it get to a point in time where it's just too late in their elderly age that it's not going to do any good?
Yes. So in the case of if you have a dog with hip dysplasia, for example, and that's a congenital thing that they are born with, and basically it's kind of like their hip sockets are too shallow. And so there's their hips, like they say, the actual joints just not formed as deep and as well seated as it should be. And so they're more predisposed to lameness and then earlier onset of arthritis. So in those situations, I'd say, hey, yeah, especially if this needs to be a hunting dog or it's your running buddy or something, you know, really needs to lead an active lifestyle, or you know what, it has to jump on and off the couch and watch TV with you. We still want to keep them comfortable. And so in those cases, I think, you know, oral joint supplements can really, really do wonders. Now, if we have a 12-year-old lab that has, I call it like skinny butt syndrome, where they've lost a lot of their muscle mass, can oral supplements still be helpful? Yes, to an extent, but I'd probably encourage some other, you know, modalities at that point in time because, right, then at that point, a lot of times our supplements, like I say, they really shine at that prevention or the kind of the maintenance stage. So if they still have cartilage in their joints, great. Let's keep that cartilage healthy, keep the, you know, our joints cushioned. But if we're more end stage and there's already so much cartilage is gone, you know, we talk about, you know, people talk about, oh, bone on bone, you know, I had to get a knee replacement. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're bone on bone, then you can feed them all the glucosamine and chondroitin in the world and it's not going to make a dent. And so, yes, there certainly is a point where things just aren't going to be as effective because we're too late in the game.
Mm-hmm. So what about, like, pain management, aspirin, that sort of thing, and kind of a two-part question. And obviously there's aspirin for people, but is there, like, pain relief aspirin just for dogs and cats?
Yes. Yes, there is. And I would caution, especially with kitties, there's just not – they don't metabolize things very well, so it's really hard to give them anything sort of, oh, well, this is what I've got in the medicine cabinet at home. Do not give your cat Tylenol. That is lethal. They are, is very toxic to cats. Now, with our dogs, certainly, yes, and cats, but there are very specific, you know, veterinary, you know, animal-designed pain medications. So NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, you know, we think about, right, our ibuprofen, you know, our meloxicam, that sort of thing. So there is some crossover. I will say dogs tend to be more sensitive to aspirin. That's not what I reach for, especially if we're going to be doing something long-term. They're more sensitive from it from kind of like a bleeding or stomach ulcer standpoint, and obviously mm-hmm. we want to make sure we're dosing correctly. So, yes, there are dog and cat-specific pain relievers that are designed for them to be safer, that they, like say, minimize liver and kidney effects, GI, you know, stomach ulceration, that sort of thing. So, yes, there are very much pet-specific medications, and they tend to be more effective. And then they're flavored, you know, they're beef-flavored or something, too, as well, which makes administration easier.
And I would imagine how well they work kind of depends on how bad your pet is. Kind of like with humans. I mean, you know, there's only yep. so much you can do as diseases progress. It's just, you're just trying to keep them comfortable.
Right, right. Absolutely. I mean, I'd love it if I could make it, you know, so that every dog didn't limp anymore. But, I mean, at some point, like, say, on the human side, they might be getting a joint replaced. Well, not all joints can be replaced in animals, and certainly there is an expense and things associated with that and, you know, the reality that it's probably not going to happen. And so what is, you know, sort of the new normal? I mean, all right, so maybe we have to lift them up into the truck. They can't jump anymore. But, hey, they still like going for rides, mm-hmm. you know, and they can still get up and go outside and potty, that sort of thing. You know, they're not just – you don't have to help them up. So, yes, there's definitely quality. can't always revert them to puppyhood, but keeping them comfortable and knowing that, right, I mean, like you said, we get older too, Jeff, and have limitations that maybe we didn't have before, and the same is true for our pets. Mm-hmm.
So what can folks do around their house for senior pets? I mean, I'm thinking if you got a lot of stairs, maybe make it a little ramp to get the dog outside, things like that. What can we do around the house to make it a little easier for them?
Yes, yes. So certainly consistency and routine is great, and ramps are very, very helpful. I mean, like I see, if you do have a lot of stairs, or if it is a pet that sleeps with you, you know, get them the little pet ramp or pet stairs so they're not jumping on and off the bed, or, you know, lift them on and off if they're small enough, that sort of thing. Maybe they like to sit on the back of the couch and look out the window and, you know, bark at the neighbors going by. Okay, well, maybe you have an ottoman, so there's, you know, an ottoman under the couch, under the back of the couch sort of thing, and they're not trying to leap. I'd say that the jumping is the big thing. Try to, you know, help them into the back of the truck and help them out of the back of the truck now, even though they used to do it. You know, I wish, you know, now getting older, I think, oh, man, I should have been nicer to my knees, right? I mean, as a kid. You know, so let's be nice to our pets' knees. I mean, and right, and then, you know, once they reach that middle-aged, you know, talk to me about, you know, hey, do you think it would be worthwhile about getting on a joint supplement, or is there something else that we need to work on? And sometimes there's some kind of physical therapy exercises or passive range of motion, which is sort of means, you know, like as the dog's laying on the couch with you, you sort of do like bicycle exercises with their legs, you know, stretches. So, I mean, there's some kind of physical therapy things, too, that you can do at home with your pet. You know, maybe they need a nightlight. And I think also, especially as our dogs age, they can get sort of doggy dementia as well, and it's officially called canine cognitive dysfunction, but it's, you know, I mean, they have senior moments, and so they sometimes they'll get lost in the house. So, I mean, I'm not saying don't ever rearrange the furniture, but, you know, I mean, just maybe be aware that if you have an elderly dog, you might find them lodged behind the couch, between the couch and the wall, because they got confused. I mean, there's a lot of, they can become disoriented. Sometimes they might wander. Oh, no, I've never had to tie Fluffy out. You know, he just stays in the yard. Oh, well, now Fluffy just wandered over to the neighbors sort of aimlessly. You can see changes in their sleep and wake cycle, where maybe they're up, they're panting, or they're just more restless at night. And it's not so, I mean, there can be a physical pain component where maybe they can't get comfortable, but otherwise it's more of a, like an anxiety. You know, they just, their day and nights kind of get flipped around. Sometimes they sort of revert back and they lose some of their house training habits and they start pottying in the house. Certainly we can also have incontinence issues, you know, say more of a medical kind of concern, but you can see, like, say, potty accidents. Maybe they become, there's a change in kind of their awareness or their interactions where suddenly they're, you know, you've got your friend or your kid comes home from college and the dog acts like, well, I don't know who they are. I'm not, you know, they're not excited to see them, or maybe they're a little more wary about them. And so, like, they also can get sort of this doggy dementia, and just being aware, I mean, maybe they need a nightlight, or maybe you need to make a more specific kind of like bedtime routine so that, you know, to help them be comfortable. And then this is where some things like supplements like melatonin can come into play, just in helping them, you know, kind of cope and maintain their regular routine.
For this and a whole bunch more, because we covered a lot of topics today on the June edition of Pet Talk, how can folks make an appointment? And, of course, they can find out more about Homestead Animal Health, Facebook, website, give them the phone number, all that good stuff, all that contact information that we need to get out there. Yes.
Yes. Please follow us on Facebook. Check out our website, homesteadmlhealth.com. Give us a call, 432-9501. I'd be happy to see your cat, dog, or horse.
Outstanding. Great job, as always. Looking forward to the July edition of Pet Talk. Have a great month. We'll talk, I guess, a little less than a month.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you.